We are so pleased to have with us today Joseph May. Welcome.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Thank you so much for your service. Appreciate that so much.
Appreciate it.
So what, first of all, how did you get in the service?
Really believe the Lord led us to join. In 2007, we decided it was time to give back. We've been giving to the community in various ways through social work, and now we want to give back to the community on a greater whole, and that was to our country. So we made the decision to join the United States Army.
Okay. So when you say we...
Mm-hmm. My wife and my kids. It's not a... joining and being in military service is not a singular thing. It's a plural. Because it's you and your family. Your family serves right along with you. When you deploy, when you're going for long months in training, it's like they're in it too. So
absolutely. I remember my brother-in-law was in a mission in Vietnam, and we all, my sister, my parents, and mm-hmm. us as children, stood there in that kitchen waiting and waiting and waiting for news.
Yes.
And you're absolutely right. Yes. It is it's a lot that family goes through.
My entire family, there's not one generation where no one has served. And at one point, all the males, all the husbands and fathers were all in the service at the same time. So my mom, my dad had a little it was a little rough for them for a little bit.
They had a lot of praying to do.
Yes, they did. And that they did. So we're appreciative of that.
Yeah, exactly right. All right, so you wanted to give back. Tell me a little bit, before we get into that, what kind of social work were you doing?
I was doing foster care case management, and I worked with juvenile delinquents.
Nice.
So we were trying to stop the recidivism of kids keep coming back into the system, getting in trouble, getting locked up. Our objective was to bring them to something different, to help them learn how to survive and thrive.
This interview could go on for a while, I'll tell you what. All right, so let's talk military here. Okay. So what was the step you took to go into the military?
The first thing was we prayed. During that time, there was conflict. And so just joining, it was a big decision, because ultimately you sign up to give your life for your country.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was something that we didn't just approach lightly. So we prayed about it, and we took our time in making that decision. And so you go through everything. You go through the background checks. You go through discussing with your family the possibility that I can get deployed and die. What would happen? So you got to cover every ground. Most people sometimes go in to get an education, to get the GI Bill. I already had my bachelor's. So this was something we were doing out of our love for our nation, out of our service to the Lord, that we felt we needed to do. So we just did it. And we didn't look back.
That's remarkable. All right, so where did that lead you?
To Fort Benning, Georgia.
Okay, and then tell me about that.
Fort Benning, Georgia was 3rd ID, Kelly Hill, I Bleed Blue. It was a great experience. It was a growing experience for me, because our family was just away and it was just us. So we had to learn how to grow and thrive together. We had to learn what our faith really meant. Because you get tested, and it gets difficult. It gets tough out there. But we just decided to grow. I was a paralegal. So one of the things that you learn is leadership. You learn how to lead well. You learn how to tell people in high positions no. You learn to understand the letter of the law and the spirit of the law, and then which time you need to apply that. You also learn to see life in its rawest and sometimes ugliest form. And you also learn how to be compassionate and be gracious, because a lot of people who get locked up, they have horrible stories in the background. Not all do, but some do. And you learn to be a lot more compassionate and patient. Things take time. And then that spurs you on to do other things in leadership as you grow older. And it definitely did for us. It encouraged us when we got out to work with the community as a whole, to try to bring people closer to the Lord, but also to actually, be the church and do things, be active. It's one thing to sit together in pews and hug each other. It's another thing to be at their house when they're having difficult times, situations. So it encouraged me to do leadership things, whether it's political, whether it's in the community. You don't have to be an elected official to affect the community for change.
Mm-hmm.
You can do that just by being a good neighbor. And I think when you look around in our country, you see that there's great divide, and it's not some political scheme that's going to bring it together. It's people coming back together. It's the same for Estherville. It's the people. I mean, that's why we moved here. It was the people, it was the community, and I think we need to continue to express that. The community changes us. The community is what's good for us, and we just need to keep continuing to do that. So,
and you were involved with some pretty heavy duty stuff. You were training to keep our country safe.
Yes.
And there are some things in your training that you're not allowed to tell us about.
That is correct.
But that's probably a very good thing.
It's a very good thing.
Yeah. And now that actually brings up a great question.
Mm-hmm.
As citizens, and since you were right in the middle of it, citizens sometimes think they have a right to know everything.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you say to them, you know what? No, you don't.
Mm-hmm.
How do you make that argument?
You regret it like Adam and Eve. There's just some things we don't need to know. We don't tell our kids everything because they don't need to know everything. That's every parent.
Mm-hmm.
They don't need to know everything because the information is not always beneficial and they can't process it well enough to deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
There's things that we had to learn in the military because our job is to keep the country safe.
Mm-hmm.
But we were also trained how to process that information correctly to the point it's not overwhelming. Now, there are some things that I saw, some things that you do that are difficult to process and deal with, but you have tools right there next to you. And I think sometimes when we try to give this overbroad information to everybody, we don't give them the tools to process that because we can't reach everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just not a safe thing. There's some times where, you know, it's like the Matrix. Sometimes you need to take the blue pill. And there's sometimes you're going to have to take the red because you have no choice.
Mm-hmm.
But it's okay not to know everything.
Mm-hmm.
I think the oversell and overuse and overinformation has been very detrimental to just all of us.
Right.
There used to be a time where news went off. There used to be a time where the television went off. Now you can watch news all the time. You can get information any time of the day. And then some of this information is not disseminated correctly, so we don't get the accurate information. So now we're making assumptions based off this minute information that we have. And these assumptions lead us to other assumptions, lead us to start berating each other and yelling at each other, and we don't know the full story.
We might have things on social media that we read on social media and we take it as true.
Yes.
And it might not be true at all.
I mean, our technology is so advanced. You have green screens now. You can look like you're in a conversation with somebody you're not in a conversation with.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's the whole thing of putting bad information out. You're just trying to appeal to a certain audience to get a certain reaction. If you look at a lot of information that you Google, it's based off of algorithms, it's based off numbers, what you Google the most. And so they're going to bring the top things up that you Google the most, and you're going to think that's real information.
Mm-hmm.
But it might not be the whole story.
Right.
I mean, there's your side, my side, and then there's the truth. And that's always hard to get to because the truth is something you have to investigate. And when I was a paralegal, I still don't like shows like NCIS or CSI or even when JAG was on because it's not how it really goes.
Mm-hmm.
It's not how it works. You have to investigate a lot to get the truth out because generally when you get to the truth, you realize how wrong you were in your beginning with your simple assumption.
So, it ended up being an amazing experience.
It was the best experience of my life.
Honestly.
Outside of marrying my wife and coming to know Jesus, but it was the best experience. And having kids, so let me put all that out there.
Right.
But I would say it challenged me in ways I didn't think I was challenged.
And you left when?
I left in 2012.
And tell me a little bit about your path after 2012 then.
So after 2012, we went to Colorado. We helped do some ministry there. And I was working at a regular job. I just felt this pull and this call to go back into ministry in some capacity. And one of my friends came down to Iowa. He interviewed for a church. He came back and said, you know, I think you should interview us for the pastorate there. So I did. They accepted me. We came down. So we have this pull in our family to do stuff in the community.
Mm-hmm.
And it's always drawn us more and more into the community. And so we did. We helped the community out really well. We did things that standing outside with people late nights at bars, trying to get them comfort, get them joy, we had them Bibles, prayed with them, loved on them. I married a couple. That was fun. And then we moved over here because we saw something over here in the Estherville area that we just really enjoyed. We saw a community.
Mm-hmm.
Walking your dog at midnight if you want to. Everybody knows your name. I've playfully said, but I mean it with a turn of endearment, this is Mayberry to me.
Mm-hmm.
This is a wonderful place for
us. Where'd you grow up?
I grew up in St. Louis.
Oh yeah, I would guess.
Yes. So this is a little different. So when I hear people say Estoril's getting bad, I always laugh because I can take you to where some difficult places are. And I love St. Louis. I think they have some things to work on for sure. But there's something about a small town feel outside of a big metropolitan city. And so when we got here, our desire was just to continue to help the community. So I ended up working in various places. I did social work, FSRP work. I worked at the local egg plant. I ended up getting a job at the hospital. I worked at the college. And then from there, we just wanted to affect the community more. So we started a group called Community Compassion, where we just want to be the hands and feet of Christ in the community. And last night we helped with the Very Holy Family doing community meal. We just want to help and be a part of the community, any compassion, any part that we can. And at this juncture, I just want to continue to help. So I'm making plans to help politically in the future here.
Okay.
Hopefully in November. So.
Now, you talked about leadership in the military.
Yes.
So tell me a little bit about how you think you grew in your leadership skills.
Well, as a paralegal, you have 400 to 500 or more soldiers that you're responsible for. You're the only one responsible for all the legal work and legal action. You're the one that has to go to the commander and say, this isn't right legally. You can't do that. You have to go to someone who outranks you 1,000 times over and tell them no. And they're going to yell, they're going to scream, they're going to threaten you. They're going to say, you don't know what you're talking about, but you have to stand your ground. And so one of the things it showed me as a leader, it's okay to tell someone who's over you no. It also showed me that you have to be patient and listen as a leader. Leaders who yell and scream and dictate aren't good leaders. They just have authority. Leaders who actually sit and listen and make wise decisions, even if it's not popular, are good leaders. Because they're doing it for the benefit of their people. They're not doing it for the benefit of themselves. Leaders who only care about themselves are not good leaders. Leaders who only promote, whether on their social network, whether in their speeches, only promote themselves, that's not a good leader. A leader is trying to find out what's going on in the community and those that I'm leading, and how can I help them to get to where they need to be.
Mm-hmm.
And a leader is someone who realizes they don't have all the answers. As a matter of fact, they realize they know nothing. And so they're going to surround themselves with people to find these answers and listen to the community.
I don't know if you've read this book, Lead for God's Sake by Todd Gongwer. I don't know if you've read it.
I've heard of it.
If you have not, I would recommend it to you. It's a phenomenal book. It talks about leadership, but it talks about relationships. And you talk about how one can minister in a church, but one can minister to your neighbor as
yes.
well. And
yes.
that might be the most powerful ministry of all.
Yes.
And I've told this many times on the radio that my mother would see these missionary trips that would take place, and she was okay with that.
Mm-hmm.
But she would always say, there's a big mission field right in town.
Yes, it is.
So
it is.
Anyway, thank you for serving our country.
Thank you.
I know there are some incredible things that you were working on that you can't tell us about, but
yeah.
thank you very much.
Thank you.
Joseph May, thank you again for your service.